come out of executive session.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to come out of executive session. Is there any objection? All right, with no objection, we are back to our regular school board meeting. We have already determined the quorum. Ms. Welton, you have the board goals. Can you read those?
The Mat-Su Borough School District. Our vision, Mat-Su Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission, Mat-Su Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Our core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, commitment. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff.
Thank you, Member Welton. We would like to ask Sterling Maffey to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Madam President, I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
All right, the agenda has been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to continue with our agenda as set out? Seeing none, we will go ahead with our meeting. The first order of business is person to be heard on non-agenda items. Clerk Welton will read the rules for the non-agenda items, persons to be heard.
Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per Board Policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. There are specific guidelines, and these are: the speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, or may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee, or take the issue under advisement. We have a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is the first half hour. On our list, we have Holly Mothershead. Holly?
Now knowing that you guys will not be able to answer my question, that worries me. I wanted to know what the new policy for the schools informing the parents regarding lice at school. Since you guys guys allowed to clue me in more?
We will have staff come and explain the new policy to you, tell you where you can find it online and everything else.
And who will be able to do something about it if there's problems, yeah?
They'll be able to explain the process to you. All right.
Thanks.
The next person on the list is going to be discussing something that is to be taken up later in the meeting. So I'm all three of the next people on the list are for that, and so that's an item that it will come up later, and I'll call you up at that time.
So will you take your testimony on that item when we get to that action item, if you would like to speak on that? Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on non-agenda items before the school board? All right, seeing no one else who would like to speak on non-agenda items, we will move on to our agenda. First on the docket is administrative reports. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to invite our Director of IT Services, Mr. Justin Mishu, and a student worker and senior at Palmer High School, Sterling Maffey, to the podium. I'm delighted to introduce them this evening, as well as delighted in their presentation of what they're going to share. Matt Sue, as you know, from previous board meetings, has received awards in the area of IT and technology and moving forward. And in fact, just recently at a Rotary meeting, a member said that his son-in-law worked for us and that he was quite impressed with our IT department, and he can't believe how much we do for school. So with that being said, and without further ado, I'd just like to share what a student worker can do in cooperation under excellent leadership. And let me turn it over to Mr. Mishu.
Good evening, Board. I'm Justin Mishu, the Director of IT. I just want to explain tonight what the student worker, Sterling, will be discussing. He'll be talking about the district app that we released a couple months ago, but I just want to take one step back and explain kind of how all that came into play. A couple years ago, about 3 years ago, I looked at the department and realized that, you know, we've got a lot of students we can take advantage of, and wanted to do something within IT where we could take advantage of that. So I started with working with Ray DePriest in the Career and Tech Department and looking to select a couple high school students to start a student worker program. Sterling was the last one of those original ones that began with us halfway through his sophomore year. In addition to that, we started internship programs working with Matsu College and then Avtech out of Seward. So each year we have, you know, 1 to 2 people from those places that work in IT. Part of this as well, we wanted to give them work that is actually being used throughout the district, throughout the department, and not just busy work or grunt work, as some would say. So that was one of the things that, you know, I've challenged everybody. So we've had staff do things, you know, working on our website, working at our help desk, answering iParent emails, answering phone calls. We've had staff help with network configurations of switches, deployments of switches, wireless configurations and setup, and many other projects, from documentation to you know, special projects, you know, varying number of things. And one of the things that I challenged Sterling with was working on developing our district app. And I'll let him explain that to you here. So,
And just before Mr. Maffey begins, I want to let you know the colloquial term of taking advantage of is used in the most positive of ways.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Sterling Maffey, and I'm a senior at Palmer High School. It's nearly my third year working as a student worker in IT, and I'd like to take a moment here to talk about our newest mobile application and some of the design process behind it. First of all, the first thing that anyone asks when we say we have an application available is, what does it do? The purposes for the MSBSD app is really threefold. The first, optimize and centralize communication between the district and our stakeholders. The second is to provide an innovative way to stay connected to district news and features. And the third is to ensure that this tool is low maintenance and easy for us to update. With that in mind, I'd like to go over a few of the features of this new application, the first of which is a simple user interface. When we were designing this app, we thought that it was important that anyone could go and download the application and immediately upon launching it, be able to navigate and find information which they're looking for. So that was one of our priorities. Second is a scalable design, which is pretty exciting. It works on an iPod, iPhone, iPad, and also Android, so it's a cross-platform compatible application. Some of the features that we include are calendar and news feeds, social network integration, photo and video galleries, and an email contact feature for easy questions and answers about the district. Also, there's a static footer navigation, which you can see on that screenshot there at the very bottom, that black bar. And basically, as you navigate throughout the application, that will stay at the bottom, giving you direct access to some of our more prominently used features. Lastly, this application is self-updating, meaning that as our employees update information on the website, it is automatically pushed over to the application, so as soon as you open it, you can get the most current news and features in the district. And with that, I'll go into a little bit more in depth of the widgets. First is news, and it's one of our self-sustaining features. It pulls directly from the headlines feature on the district homepage, the very first thing you see when you go to our website. The next two sort of go together, Facebook and Twitter. No matter which social network you prefer, we have accounts on both of those, and you can easily stay updated with these integrated media. Next, we have Photos, which is a Flickr account, and it's constantly being updated with cool pictures from around the district, which you can look at, and they're easily navigatable through inside the application. Also, calendar is another one of our self-sustaining features. It pulls from the district calendar, so if you were to say, wonder, what time is the school board meeting? Then you could easily go to there and see exactly what time, what date, and it is all updated automatically. The next is a kind of fun feature, which I like. It's a map of all 45 of our schools, with little pinpoint markers, and whenever you click on one of them, it gives you more information about that school and a link to their website if you wanted to find even more information. The About Us feature is pretty interesting because it gives a concise description of our district, especially useful for first-time families or new students coming to the district. And also there is a link there to go to the homepage of our district. Our video is connected to a YouTube account, another sort of media for staying updated, and lastly, the Contact Us sends an email to our PIO, and that can easily keep you updated on things. I'd like to go into a little bit of the process of creation. For that, I've split it up into three different categories. The first is design, second, functionality, and third, deployment and promotion. It's important to note that this was a very collaborative process, and I worked extensively with various IT staff people learning techniques that I might need in creating this application, as well as our PIO for the social network department and other various things. Also, I was in contact with Apple and Google for the deployment of this application over the web for their approval. So, the first step here in design, Justin provided a template from iBuild app, which is a website which is basically a code converter, making my job a lot easier because I can code something as if it were a web page and it turns it into a mobile application, which is very useful. After I had the rough outline of what the template was going to look like, I customized that design with a District Blue theme, which I think suits it very well, and you can easily see as soon as you launch it or on that screenshot a few slides earlier. Lastly, after the design was customized, the icons were each individually designed and strategically placed based on what we thought was going to be the most useful and would get the most traffic from the app users. The next is functionality. It's important whenever you have an application of any type that it works. So this step was vital in the process of creation. RSS feeds, which is basically what we use for our calendar and our news headlines, were used and added at this point. Also, the map was formatted, as well as all the other features for phone viewing, so that it was easy to see and easy to navigate through. Lastly, social network linkage, making sure we have up-to-date links to our Twitter and our Facebook and our Flickr and our YouTube to make sure that all of our stakeholders are getting the most current information. Lastly is navigation continuity, making sure throughout the application, especially on the static footer, that all the links go to exactly where they say they're going to go, and throughout it's easy to navigate. Lastly, in this process was deployment and promotion. We needed to create developer accounts with both Apple and Google in order to submit our application for approval. After that, we did submit the application, and they look over it for appropriateness and functionality, which we went over and I checked in the last step. And the application was finally released on June 27th of this year. It can now be downloaded for free in the Apple App Store or Google Play. There's a keyword there if you want to download it. After this deployment, and I then worked with some IT staff to promote it on the website and social media throughout. This application, in my opinion, is the most innovative way to stay connected, especially just on your mobile device. And if you don't have it yet, be sure to download it. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Member Rutherford.
Thank you. I downloaded it right away. It was very easy to figure out right away. I like it a lot. I'm wondering, is there any integration with this and Blackboard Connect, or are those totally different things?
I can answer that. The Blackboard Connect feature, we've got kind of a couple components. We've got this, the website, which if you've gone to our website on a mobile device, you see that. That is separate. And then the Blackboard Connect is how we communicate via messages, whether it's phone calls or emails. That is a separate phone app that gets you those messages that the district sends out, whether a school or at the district level, you have access to those as a parent or a staff. So that is a separate piece. Yep. And we did kind of promote with Catherine Essery all the different mobile features. And if you visit our website, www.matsuk12.us/mobile, we explain all those items.
Member Larson.
You can explain all day long to me, but, you know, when you're impaired...
Uh-oh, he's going to give you his phone.
I've got my phone here. You know, I've got an app. That's about as far as I can go, okay? So I'm going to have a friend of mine download this for me, and since you've got a user that's very impaired with computers, I will see how friendly this is. And you're telling me that it's a pretty friendly user.
That's correct.
Correct. Yeah, because, see, I had to call the secretary today to find out what time the meeting was today. But you're saying I can find all this on here, right?
Yep, right in the middle, actually, the calendar application.
I don't know. We're going to give it a try. Here it is.
Student member Williams.
I'm very impressed. I appreciate it very much. And what I'm I'll leave you with this, I think it's an innovative tool for all this people in the Mat Valley to be able to get on our website, on our mobile device, and be connected. I think it's 10 steps ahead of everybody else in their district, and that shows that we're open and totally transparent, and I appreciate it. But I will try, I promise. Okay. Thank you.
I look forward to your feedback.
I just want to say, as a student, I'm really excited to see this. No more having to connect it to your homepage. I also was wondering if there was any way we could get, like, iStudent or iParent connected. I noticed there wasn't a link to that.
If you actually look at the mobile site I mentioned earlier, iParent, which allows the student connections, that does have a mobile-friendly view now on the mobile devices, so that will show up a little friendlier so you're not having to zoom and scroll around.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Madam President, the next administrative report is an update on the board vacancy by HR Director Katie Gardner.
Good evening, board members. I'm just going to run through very quickly with you the process that we are going to be using to proceed with the board vacancy selection. There are a couple of recommendations that we have that we'll put forward before you tonight, and we'll just want some general direction on how you'd like to proceed, basically scheduling the next meetings and when we'll go through the selection process. Ms. Escobedo is handing out folders that have the information in them that we'll be talking about tonight. First, I am very pleased to let everybody know that you did have 7 individuals who submitted an application to serve on the board. We will be posting the information that they provided on the website probably tomorrow, so that members of the public have an opportunity to look over these candidates and submit for public comment. Any questions on any of the candidates so far? You can certainly ask those as we proceed. And there is no expectation that you go through all of these this evening. We're not going to spend time to do that. We'll really focus on the process. So first, just as a quick refresher, there's a few requirements that exist. That we've noted the statutes just for you. Basically, what exists in the law is that you have to replace the exiting board member within 30 days. That's a statutory requirement. It's also outlined in your policy, the old and the new policy. It remains in there, the one that you'll be approving tonight. Qualifications of board members is also established. Basically, they need to be an eligible voting member of the public. And then you also have BP 9223, which you'll be looking at later in the meeting to either approve or make some suggestions, which will formalize the process. We're operating on the assumption that that policy will continue, will be approved as discussed last time, so most of this is outlined in that policy. So everything we talk about now will be relevant after the policy is approved. So just very quickly in looking at the timeline, this is probably where we'll need a majority of the board's attention and a decision made today, is that we posted the vacancy on October 25th. We asked that respondents provide the information we were requesting by today at noon. We set that timeline so that we could share with the board this evening what the response was like. Tomorrow we will be sending to, what we would like to do is to send to the candidates who applied questions and solicit their written responses so that we can provide those to the board and to the public, similar to what we did last time. In your packet, on the right-hand side, I believe, you'll find a copy of the letter that we intend to send to the candidates. On the back side of that letter are the five questions that we used last time. We can certainly take a look at those. It would be our recommendation that we continue with those same questions, unless there's any objection to doing so. Then I know there was some discussion that we can hold a meeting on November 13th. As Sterling so eloquently explained to all of us, we're in the modern age. We can receive most of this and share it with you as well electronically. So unless the board has questions and would like to review together as a group in a public meeting, we can facilitate the collection and dissemination of the information electronically. So it would be our recommendation that we will collect all of the questions from the candidates and be able to give those to the board, post them online, collect public comment, and also share that with the board, and look to have November 13th maybe be a deadline, not necessarily a meeting date. And we would look to schedule the session where the presentations are conducted the next week. There are seven candidates. We estimate that that could take around 90 minutes to get through the presentations, the board discussion, and the selection process. We could look to schedule that on the 20th when there's already a regular board meeting. If you would like to, say, start the meeting at 5, we could get through what we can get through and then start the meeting immediately following that new member selection process. Otherwise, we will want to talk about when is a good time to go through the selection process if you're not wanting to do it already on the 20th.
Is there any comment from the school board? How do you feel about adding it to a regular meeting, Member Rutherford?
I would rather not. I guess I could be talked into it, but 90 minutes on top of already full meetings, I sure would rather get it done before that and have them join us at our November 20th meeting. It's an awfully long meeting to add. I think 90 minutes is actually optimistic. They're already full long meetings.
Yeah, last time when we did this process, we had a little bit of additional time built into the presentations. We've narrowed those presentations down to 5 minutes rather than 5 to 7. We have a little bit fewer number of candidates this time, and it took us 2 hours to do the full process last time. In addition, we had one member, if you remember last time, who was attending telephonically. We spent a fair amount of time with some technical difficulties connecting with him, making sure he was able to see all the information. So that did take some additional time, which is just explaining how we came to approximately 90 minutes when we were thinking about the amount of time it would take.
Member Larson.
Yeah, I would like to do it in a meeting. If we could maybe schedule a meeting for 5 and add an additional hour to it. I don't know if we did that last time. Did we do that, or did we do that?
We had a special meeting last time.
Meeting.
Mm-hmm. I think we did have more candidates last time, but what my concern is that I think this time of year we're going to have a hard time finding a date that all school board members are going to be available, whereas if we do it at our regular meeting, everybody already has that calendared. So, Member Welton.
I would prefer that we do it at a special meeting. I do feel that if we put it in with the regular meeting, that we may be more rushed, or we won't take time to really think about things. I don't know. That's my concern.
Okay, when we did talk about it before, and we kind of gave dates to Stacy, Monday the 18th was the one meeting that most of us could be to, but Member Welton, that's the one that you can't come to. So the way we're looking at it is if we have anything before, we're going to be missing one of the six people voting on adding. Member Welton.
My thought was that we would continue with the 13th. That we would have the meeting on the 13th. Is that not enough time to gather all the information? We would just have the information. We did that the last time. We would just
the tough thing is providing enough time for the candidates to be able to provide a thoughtful response, and then giving time to the board to review all of those responses. That does make it pretty quick, because the 13th, if memory serves, is next Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 1 week to go through that whole process.
And we had the questions and the answers, and then actually posted them and had them made public so we could receive public input. So there was a time in between when candidates had to turn them in for the board to review them individually and then be prepared. And that was a time crunch that we're coming into, really for that public to also be involved and to have comments if they chose, either online or to show up at the next meeting.
Are there any other concerns? Any other thoughts on the matter? Member Larson.
No, go ahead.
I really think it's important that we get responses posted and be able to have the school board look at those responses, think about them, also have the public have a chance to look at those responses and weigh in on those. So I'm thinking the 13th might be too quick for that, Member Welton. Member Rutherford?
It seems like last time we only got the answers the day before, that morning, or it was very short last time. I remember reading them pretty frantically in about half a day before they had their presentations.
I don't remember exactly what the lead time was for board members to receive them, but it was tight. We're trying to avoid that this time. The other thing we did is we did schedule an hour before the meeting where we asked all board members to come in for that set-aside time to review all of the application packets before, because it was so tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure time's going to allow for all members to do that either. But it was a very tight turnaround. That was one of the pieces of information we received when we did this last process, was that it was just a little bit too rushed for board members to have time to really review all that information. And we didn't receive any, we posted the information. I don't think we had adequate time, nor did we embed a mechanism for individuals to provide written public comment, and we want to be able to do that this time.
All right. If there's any major objection, I'd really like to have it at the board meeting on the 20th. Gives the public time to read answers and maybe make comment on that. Member Larson?
Do you think it'd be worth a while to extend that meeting? Say start at 5:30, something like that?
I think we can look at extending that meeting and starting a little early, and maybe keeping the rest of the agenda kind of light, so we have, pretty short presentations, and then just move forward with this. All right. Okay. So
I've got a...
Yes.
So are we talking about coming in an hour or so early to review the packets, and then the process?
But we will have the packet emailed to us a week early, and also that will be posted online for the public to look at that information also and make comment.
So then the interview process, we would have that hour?
The interview process and the selection would be about 90 minutes embedded on our regular meeting on the 20th.
Okay.
I believe ideally what we would be looking at is you'll have all of the information from the candidates on the 13th. On the 20th, if we can start the meeting at 5 or 5:30, we will start the meeting with the candidate presentations and try to get through the candidate presentations and selection process at the very beginning of the meeting. So if that takes an hour, you'll be able to start the meeting right on time. If it takes an hour and a half, then we would move to regular business, 6:30-ish.
Member Welton.
I would like to make the suggestion that we just have our regular meeting start at 7. That way we're not rushed we'll able to have a break between the meeting and the presentations and everything in the meeting.
Okay, so advertise it that the regular meeting will start at 7, we'll start at 5 for candidate selection. That might be a good way to advertise. All right. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So just a brief review of what to expect on the 20th. We will be limiting the candidate presentations to 5 minutes. It's an oral report only. We're not allowing them to use any multimedia, just to present to the board on why they believe that they can add value through board service. The order will be in reverse alphabetical based on last name. Candidates will be asked to sit in a separate room while we hear from the candidates before them. Once they've given their own presentation, they can sit and listen to the rest of the presentations that are to follow. After each presentation, the board will have between 5 and 10 minutes to ask any follow-up questions that they think are relevant based on what they heard through the presentations. Again, just to recap, what we'll be looking at happening on the 13th is no meeting. We will collect the candidate responses. We will provide those to the board members, post them online, and then hope to have a method by which individuals can provide written public comment, and we will work on what that process is going to be. Probably a simple email link that'll go to a single place, which the board would be able to review the feedback. Then on the 20th is the meeting where the presentations would take place, board deliberations and discussions, and the final vote, which will happen in accordance with the procedures outlined in the policy. Our estimated timeline, again, as I mentioned, will be about 90 minutes, but if we have that two-hour time slot, that should provide plenty of time for the board to go through the thorough process. The vote or the selection process consists of three identified rounds. We may not need to go through all three, but each board member will be given 4 votes. That number of votes is based on the number of candidates. So with 7 candidates, there'll be 4 votes given to each board member. You'll be able to cast those votes. Any candidate who's got at least 4 votes will be able to move on to round 2, at which point each board member will be given a single vote. Usually after that second round, there is a selection. If not, we will go to round 3, where the top 2 candidates will be identified, and again, board members will get another vote. We will make sure that this process works as it did previously, trying to automate the tally so we can move through things very quickly and not be held up with counting ballots. And then in the end, we'll have an action item for the board to basically affirm the selection.
Could we select and confirm the same night and have
yes,
them
absolutely.
Sit at the meeting?
I will verify that we could get through the selection and take the oath of office. I don't know if the borough assembly has to do something. I think they probably do.
Okay.
But we will verify that and be able to let you know.
Okay. All right. Are there any questions or concerns from the board? All right. Thank you, Ms. Gardner.
The questions. Are we comfortable proceeding with the questions we used last time?
I think we may want to look at those.
Okay.
If anybody was here last time and were asking the same questions, they might have a little bit of a up on somebody else. So I think
I'll get direction from the board.
Written
questions?
Oh, okay. No, I'm comfortable with the written questions. The follow-up questions, though, we'll talk
yes.
about as a board before
sure.
we do that. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. That looks like we are finished with administrative reports. We're moving on to borough and city reports, and it looks like we have both the city of Wasilla and Palmer here, and take it away.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the school board, Superintendent Paramo, Doug Griffin, city manager of Palmer. Glad to be here tonight. The city of Palmer, we are on a calendar fiscal year, so we're in the throes of our budget deliberations right now. We had a meeting last night to review leave and health insurance issues, and that's always kind of a big part of our budget, is seeing how that, as you know, dealing with those issues yourself as a body, kind of a fast-moving moving target with regard to costs for our health insurance for our employees. So I think we got a lot of that resolved last night, so that was a good thing. Just in terms of things around town, we had sort of an experimental Friday farmers market at the depot on Friday. It was pretty well attended. The day that we have consistently open of the in the depot is Mondays, so we're hoping that perhaps they will book Mondays through the winter to have sort of market Mondays or something. I don't know what it is. So that's a good thing. A lot of produce from local farmers are still available throughout the winter months, root vegetables, and of course that draws other people too. It was organized by the Soil and Water Conservation District and some other people that kind of helped organize it, which is kind of nice. It makes it easier for the city to have somebody kind of unifying and organizing that. So that was a nice addition to sort of the market scene, sort of an extension of the Friday flings into the winter. So we hope that's a successful thing. Again, that's going to be determined on the organizers of that. And then, of course, coming up on Veterans Day, City Hall will be closed Monday, and then at the City of Palmer also takes the Friday after Thanksgiving off, so City of offices will be closed. Of course, emergency services, snow removal, things like that will happen as needed. But other normal city services will be closed on Thanksgiving the 28th and the Friday following the 29th of November. So that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Dr. Paramo, Madam President, board members, my name is Bert Caudill, City of Wasilla. I have just one item. I'm glad you kept next Wednesday, the 13th, available, because that's the night that we're going to have the city goals and objectives for the upcoming year for 2014. So if you want to go to one more meeting, 6 p.m. City Hall, Wasilla, for goals and objectives. Thank you.
Thank you. That moves us down to the Superintendent and Student Advisory Board report. Ms. Williams, would you like to go first?
Sure. First of all, I would like to apologize for my absence last meeting. I was in Juneau at the Alaska Association of Student Governments Fall Conference. Our last SAB meeting was October 30th, and we met at Career Tech High School. Member Welton joined us for our meeting and even participated in our icebreaker. I hope you had fun running around their commons with us. We had the wonderful Mrs. Becky Murphy come and join us and help us discuss curriculum and curriculum changes. We are currently working on two resolutions and are discussing tentative plans to have a joint meeting with the Anchorage SAB. We are also performing a service project at every meeting. And last meeting, we wrote uplifting and inspiring notes to hang around our schools. Our next meeting is November 20th at PJMS, if any of you guys would like to come and attend as well. Three of our executive board members will be joining you guys this weekend for the OSOP conference, and we're very excited to come, and we would like to thank you for that opportunity. That finishes up my report.
Thank you. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you. On the superintendent update, we do have two updates, so I'm going to ask that the second one, bond project, if the gentlemen who are going to help deliver that from the borough can come to the front so that we can move the meeting along. But we are going to start with the enrollment update, and Mr. Fulp is going to assist me with, he's doing it from a seat because he has electronically can do that. So just an update. We did finish our count period the last week of or October 25th. And so this is it. I want to show you this beautiful graph that is our life right now. The first July really represents FY15. The second July represents FY14. And the one in the inner circle is 15-14, and then July 1, FY13, which was last school year. I'm going to go through each one of these, but as you can see, currently starting this July, we have been operating in three different years in our budget and finance office. So the outer circle is moving forward for FY15. We began planning in July. Of course, we had this year's student count, which will actually determine the current year's amount of finances or revenue that comes to the district, but it also is used to determine next year's enrollment as well in next year's budget. We do have 17,479.95. We know that we really don't have parts of students, but in essence, this is the average daily membership. We do serve 17,800 kids daily, but some of our kids are preschool, which do not count. They're given off of a grant, so they don't count in our average daily membership. Also, some older students that are past the years of 20 do not count in the ADM. And in addition, this is actually a mean of 20 days, or the average of 20 days attendance. If a student enrolled with us in the middle of those 20 days, they would count as half of an FTE or half of a credit there. Additionally, to be a full-time FTE, a student needs four courses. So in high schools, we may have students that are only in two. Hence, we have a full-time equivalent of 17,000 or our average daily membership of 17,479.95, which equates to students coming into our schools every day closer to 17,800. We use this number along with our demographics, and Mr. Folp will share at the end of the meeting just as a quick review of how we select our projected enrollment for next year. I want you to note that the projected enrollment was due to the Department of Elementary or Education and Early Development yesterday. So yesterday was the date for next year's budget, and we just barely finished this year's account, and they won't even audit this year's account till later. So we just wanted to show you the world we live in here. So we will provide that preliminary budget coming up this year off of those projected numbers. Of course, in April, the board will send over the budget to the borough. The borough in May will approve, and then we'll begin July again. So our budgeting for FY15, which is the school year next year, is in process. What we're experiencing now is that we had our student count. That was the number, the 17,400 number that I showed you. We will have a winter revision, as we did have more students than projected, but as you know, we've been hiring staff, knowing that as numbers were coming in pretty strong. So you'll have a winter revision of your budget so that you will we'll just know how much revenue we took in and what were our expenses. We'll also have a spring revision as items change, and then final revision, which will then go into what is audited the next year, which is what we're doing for last year's numbers. So FY13 numbers are being currently audited. We will provide that annual audit. Remember, this audit is looking positive and should look positive, as this will allow us, with that change in ordinance at the borough, to build a fund balance so that our really the goal and what the board has told us in the past is that we want teachers in our classrooms, we want staff, we want our aides, we don't want to, cause that spring fear. And so with that provision in the ordinance, it does allow us to plan better and more effectively. In addition, our budgets currently this year, remember, as you recall, we didn't have any wiggle room, and so if kids don't show up, you're not funded, but yet contracts are made. So we projected 90% of our intensive count. We are going to boost that this year to project 95% of our enrollment, because we're very confident that those students will come. If they don't come, we would have a reserve to cover the contracts for the staff for which we hired. And so we are looking into the future more positively this spring due to some of the changes that the board worked very diligently in getting done this year. So those are our three circles of love, if you call them, in our budgeting process for last year, this current year, and next year. They're all occurring simultaneously this fall. With that, I just wanted Luke to share. So here is it again. Luke to share, now that I'm finished these budget cycles and updating you on the enrollment, how we project next year's enrollment. And this is just as a reminder for board members as well as our new board members, just a mind's eye picture of how that process works.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo. Again, going through the methodology as a reminder, it is in the budget book and it's been published. But this is really the process that we go through every year. Once count is finished and we have those numbers for the current year, we then take that data and we use it to project the enrollment that was due to the state on November 5th. We basically take all grades at all school sites and move them ahead one grade level. Kindergarten enrollment is established by analyzing live birth rate data determined by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. And then we apply a cohort survival rate. That cohort survival rate is determined based on the average percentage change over the last 2 years. So it takes trend data then, whether we're experiencing growth or seeing a decline. And it takes 2 years of trend data and then provides us with basically our enrollment projection. So grade level projections at every school are then combined. So we have aggregate district-wide enrollment projections by grade level. And then the last thing we do is always analyze economic trends and other factors that may assist in determining the accuracy of this enrollment. Knowing that MATSU is the fastest growing area of the state, if we have something coming online like the Goose Creek Correctional Facility, we'll accommodate some of those outside of just our trend data. So this is the methodology that was used. It's been used in the last couple years. We used it again this year. And I don't have the data in front of me tonight, but our margin of error is pretty close. The accuracy of this projection seems to bode well for us, so we're going to stick with it, and we did for this current year. Are there any questions?
Member Larson.
If we didn't, you stated that if we didn't make the projection, that the reserve would pick up where the excess teachers that we would hire. What are we looking at as a reserve for next year?
Through the president, the final audit is not published at this point, but what we do have in terms of a number is an increase of about $4.8 million in unassigned fund balance. So we just add that on to the $1.7 million of unassigned that we had previously, and we have about $6 million in reserve, approximately.
And that $6 million would take care of that. Would that take care of that projection if it didn't come through as well as the shortfall that we're going to face next year?
Through the president, the reserve is there for it's unassigned. It's basically the beauty of that is so that it acts as an emergency fund for whatever comes up, whether it's lower than projected enrollment or what we know in terms of a structural deficit. So we do have the board, and we'll get into it this budget season, but we have a lot of things on our plate in terms of future funding needs, right, as well as what happens if our projected enrollment doesn't come through. But what we have presented tonight is about 114 students over our current enrollment. So it was a fairly conservative projected enrollment. We feel pretty confident that those numbers will show up next year.
I think the thing to take from this, Member Larson, is we don't have extra money. It will go somewhere.
And to that point, Madam President, $6 million for the size of budget that we do have is nowhere close to what the state allows. It's very modest reserves in total. So it is something that we would want to continue to build.
Are there any other questions from the board? All right. Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Fulp.
Madam President, for the next administrative report, we'd like to welcome the representative from the borough forward. Thank you. The process that we will engage in for our bond project updates is that our first meeting in each month, we'll have a comprehensive review. We did this at the joint meeting, and this is the meeting for November, which we will proceed, and the next one would be then in December. Turn it over to you.
Good evening, Dr. Paramo, fellow school board members. Tonight, I'm Jeff Walden from Matsubara Capital Projects Department. And tonight I'm going to do a brief recap projects completed over the last year and a half, 2 years, projects that are ongoing right now, and projects that are programmed for the future. First, I'd like to introduce you to our staff. Myself, Bob Bechtold, John Harris, Robert Scott, Dave Steadman are all project managers, and Deb Selman is our administrative support. Right now we're managing approximately 100 plus projects valued over $300 million. That includes bonds, CIP, grant funded. So we keep busy. Over the last year, 2 years, we've completed $27 million worth of roofs. That includes this structure, Snowshoe Elementary School, Houston Middle, Wasilla Middle, Wasilla High, Colony High, Butte Elementary, Finger Lake Elementary, Palmer Junior Middle School, Swanson Elementary, Big Lake Elementary, and we have design in progress right now for Trapper Creek Elementary School, and we hope to get that completed this summer. Large projects in progress. Athletic complex is 99% complete. The only reason I left that on there, they have to come back and do some striping in the spring. Valley Pathways started construction June 2013. Matsu Day School construction started June 2013. Career Tech High School Addition is a 35% design. You begin that presentation tonight. Joe Reddington Senior Middle School High School is in design at 65%. And Denina Elementary School design contract went to the assembly for approval last night. And I'll talk a little bit more about each of these. Athletic complexes, that was $13.3 million. It was Palmer High School, Wasilla High School, Houston High School, Colony High School, and that involved artificial turf systems, drains, synthetic tracks, improved bleachers, track event venues at all locations, ADA access upgrades, press box upgrades, security surveillance, turf maintenance equipment, and various other items that we were able to get done under that project. Valley Pathways is $22.5 million. That's being designed by MCG, constructed by Collins Construction, who's a Valley contractor. It's approximately 46,000 square feet. We were able to include city water in this project. This school replaced 12 portables, and we're on schedule to occupy this facility in the 2014 school year. Matsu Day School, it's $12.4 million. Designed by Wolf Architecture, being constructed by FE Contracting, also another Valley contractor, approximately 21,000 square feet, and it will replace 5 portables, and this school is also on schedule to be occupied in the 2014 school year. Current Tech High School Addition, $16.1 million, designed by MCG. Like I said earlier, you'll be getting that design presentation tonight. It's approximately 33,000 square feet. We're estimating construction start 2014 with a goal of occupying 2015 school year. Joe Reddington Senior Middle School High School, $64.5 million. Also designed by Wolf Architecture, approximately 96,000 square feet. There are some site utility challenges, and the borough has taken on those challenges, and I think we have a plan. It's currently at 65% design, goal of constructing 2014. With occupying that school in 2015 school year. That's an aggressive schedule, but that's what we're shooting for right now. Denia Elementary School is also on the same aggressive schedule. Like I said, design team selection went to assembly last night for approval. That design team was Bettisworth North. This school is approximately 44,000 square feet, K through 5 school. Anticipate construction summer 2014 with also a goal of occupying 2015 school year. Additional projects that are also ongoing, we have the Palmer High School mechanical upgrades, $5.5 million. We put that out to bid. Unfortunately, the bids all come in above budget, so we're reworking that scope of work, putting that back out to bid, and we hope to have award December 17th. Big Lake Elementary School renovation, the original portion of the building for $3 million. That project is in progress, and we're on schedule to be complete by January. Houston Palmer Middle School locker replacement, that's in progress, and that will be complete January 2014. Flooring replacement at 7 schools. Our goal is to get that installed next summer. Upcoming projects, these projects are scheduled upon sale of next bonds. I hope to have access to those funds March, April of 2014. As soon as we do, we'll get these out to design. And that is the Iditarod Elementary School replacement, $25 million. District-wide energy upgrades, $3 million. District-wide ADA upgrades, $1.5 million. District-wide HVAC upgrades, $7.1 million. some more athletic field improvements, $6.4 million. Backup generators in 9 schools for $2.6 million. Restroom fixture replacements in 6 schools for $863,000. And Willow Elementary School roof, $758,000. That is not a bond. That was a legislative grant that came down this summer. And in conclusion, I'd like to say that our staff has a very good working relationship with the school district, maintenance department, school staff. So when I go over these projects, it's more of a partnership between project management and the school district. So if there's any questions, I'll take those.
Does anybody have any questions? All right. We're happy to see everything moving along. Thank you.
Madam President, that concludes the superintendent report.
All right, so that moves us on to the consent agenda, meetings of October 16th and October 24th. Can someone move that?
I move the consent agenda, item A, minutes October 16th, item B, October 24th minutes.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to passing these forward? All right, so those pass. I would like to take a short 10-minute break before we move on to action items. So we're in a break. Thank you. Okay, I'm calling the meeting back to order. We're moving on to action items. Can I have someone move action item A?
I move action item 14-039, student readmission case E13-001.
I'll second.
Okay, student readmission case E13001 has been moved and seconded. We do not discuss student readmission cases in public, so we're going to go right on to voting. A yes vote would be to readmit this student for a public education. Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Dierman?
Yes.
Member Michelson?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. This student is readmitted to school. Can I have someone move item B?
I move 14-034, second reading BP 9223, board vacancies.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing no public comment, can we have an administrative report?
Madam President, Catherine Gardner, HR Director, is here to answer any questions as needed by the board.
Right. Are there any questions for Mrs. Gardner? Okay, seeing no questions, we'll move right on to discussion. Is there any comment on this?
I need some understanding of where the language came from for, being able to choose that the board would present names if there wasn't any, if there weren't any candidates. Where did that come from?
Okay, so Dr. Paramo, Ms. Gardner?
Through the chair. That was taken from Anchorage School District's policy, and in reality, you also have to be prepared for the contingency that we may solicit individuals for board service, and we have no applications. So this provides an opportunity as to how the board would handle that if that happens. We've been fortunate the last few times. We've had a number of individuals apply. That hasn't always been the case. Nor would we want to assume that all of the individuals, that we always have individuals who apply.
I would like to, there was some language that wanted some adjustment, and I'll look at it. Number three, to delete the if no properly complete applications are received within the application period, then it goes on. I would like to make an amendment to the main motion to strike that if no properly complete applications are received within the application period. them.
So Member Welton has proposed an amendment. When you have a moment to read through that amendment, if someone can look and decide if they're going to second that.
Madam President, to follow up on this, in noticing this, this basically allows board discretion for such times as Director Gardner suggested, when there isn't an applicant or an applicant, a suitable applicant for the position.
I also think it would be helpful to have a pool of applicants. We could widen our pool by also nominating somebody. It wouldn't be just a nomination at the meeting. There is a contingency down there as to when would be the appropriate time by written notice or at the special meeting. Member Rutherford.
But the way it reads, it seems to imply that you could actually nominate someone at the special meeting, the meeting at which, the meeting you are holding for the purpose of filling the vacancy. It just says the special meeting, and then number four says we'll hold a special meeting for the purpose of filling the vacancy. So I'm confused that you would nominate someone on the very evening you're choosing someone. That doesn't seem right.
Member Gardner, I'm sorry, Ms. Gardner.
Tonight it feels a little that way. I'm up here so much. The reason why the policy would be written that way is so that the board is not limited. If we are running into a very tight timeline, like we are in some situations, there really may not be room to do a formal nomination process outside of the special meeting. So we put the minimums and maximums as they need to be stated in the policy so that the board has maximum discretion. So it's stated this way that it could be done in writing, which would probably be preferable ahead of the special meeting, but we didn't want to limit it to say that it would have to happen a week before the special meeting, because then you run into a situation where we wouldn't want the board to have to waive that timeline under some circumstances that may be realistic.
Member Larson.
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have a second to even discuss.
Can I have a second on this?
Second.
Okay, it's seconded. Now, Member Larson, go ahead.
I just don't see any purpose on having a school board member put out a nomination for a vacancy. I see no sense in it whatsoever. I would be very suspicious if I had that ability. Why wouldn't the person I would ask to nominate not put in their application? I mean, if I had the power to nominate somebody for the school board, from the school board, I think that would sway the vote possibly for that person to get on the board. I see a lot of issues with this whole thing, and I would like to not have that power as a school board member to be able to nominate from this chair, even if we didn't have anybody show up.
I wish to withdraw my motion.
The second needs to agree to that.
Agree.
Okay, so the motion has been withdrawn. More discussion then on the policy before us. Member Welton.
I agree with Mr. Larson. I don't like the idea that I can place somebody's name in at any time or even if there aren't any applicants. That's part of our job, is to go out and you know, say, folks, we need people here, you know, to do that, and we don't need to nominate them from here. We can talk to people, and if they go through the process and jump through the hoops, then that's the that you know, is part of the process, I think. And we can talk to people about it, but I don't really know that I can agree with number three at all, other than the announcement of the candidates prior to the special meeting.
Member Rutherford.
I don't want that, the rest of that.
All right, Member Rutherford.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with, in that situation, waiving the timeline or changing the timeline than nominating from the table, too. So do we need a motion to amend the policy to just delete number three?
Well, if I need number three, but you need part of it.
I do want to remind the board that the obligation to fill the board vacancy within 30 days is not just identified in your policy, it's identified in state statute. Mm. So that's not really a timeline that you can waive. Mm. It also speaks to why the ability to nominate is so important, because you have to fill the board vacancy in 30 days. Hopefully you're never faced with a situation where you have no applicants, but you may want to be cautious and reserve the ability to nominate if there are no applicants, if that's what you're comfortable with, because you do have a statutory obligation to fill the board vacancy within 30 days. Again, it's not your policy, it's state statute.
Member Michelson.
So this would only come into play then if we had a pool of candidates. I mean, is it possible that we wouldn't find a suitable candidate to fill a board vacancy? I mean, the way the voting is set up, we are compelled to vote and to choose the best candidate.
Yes, if we don't have people apply. I know we've had people apply in the last few years, but there has been circumstances where we've had one or two, and the last one comes in like 5 minutes before the deadline. So
okay.
It is possible that we would have this situation arise. We certainly hope it wouldn't be, and it would be our job to go out and, you know, encourage people to apply for an open position.
The reason we did recommend that you remove the "if no suitable applicants" sentence is because you may have applicants that apply that meet the minimum qualifications, meaning that they're an eligible voter, and you may not be able to agree on any of those candidates. So being able to nominate, even if there is a pool of candidates at all, provides more discretion to the board to try to find a candidate to replace whoever's exiting within 30 days. I mean, I understand your concerns. It's certainly up to the board to decide how you want that policy to be worded, but it was intended to help avoid kind of a stalemate where you may have a single candidate. One person applies, and that person is not someone that the board is willing to put on the seat. You have a candidate, you're now limited in not being able to nominate at all, which was why the amendment was brought forward as an idea, as a recommendation, to sort of avoid that situation.
Member Welton?
I don't know. I was appointed, and there were 10 applicants, and there were how many other, I don't know how many we filled since that time, but quite a few, and I don't recall there ever being a complete lack of accident of applicants. So I don't know if we're preparing for a contingency that would never happen anyway, but I suppose that there should be some process, and that would be why you would put that there. I don't know. I don't like the idea of being able to put forth a name from the meeting. I just don't. I don't think that I can vote for something that has that in it.
Member Larson.
Don't go away. As it's worded, can I nominate on the 13th from here, can I nominate, even though we have 7 applicants, I can say I want somebody else on there?
Not with the withdrawn amendment, no. The amendment's been withdrawn, so you are not able to nominate at this point in time,
so
if this policy passes as originally written.
So the way, if it's originally written or the way this policy is written now, and we don't have a pool, I can nominate.
Correct.
But I can't nominate if we have a pool of seven or eight.
Or one. Or correct.
One. Or one.
Or one.
Okay, thank you.
Member Derman? Any other ideas? Member Rutherford?
We didn't have much for guidelines before. We couldn't do it before?
No.
We would, if we were in that position of no applicants?
We had the top part of that policy,
mm-hmm.
and that was it.
And that was it.
Go ahead, Ms. Gardner.
Sorry to be butting in quite regularly this evening, but if you look on the second page or on the flip page, you can see that under bullet two, solicit applications or nominations. So the board did not really have a process or policy by which to do nominations, but there was nothing limiting the board's ability to put forward nominations. That number two was in place, and so it could have happened previously.
So in light of that, now I like the amendment that got withdrawn, because without it, we're much more tied, only if there are no applicants at all.
Ms. Gardner, many of our school board policies are on a format that Alaska Association of School Boards recommends. Is this taken from Alaska School Boards Association, or is this a compilation of our previous policy and some other things added from other school districts?
The new policy, as it's proposed, is modeled after the process that the Anchorage School District uses. And the process we used for the last board vacancy, which the board indicated that you liked that process, rather than conducting a more traditional interview. And so we modeled the policy after the Anchorage School Districts to be consistent with that process. The policy as it was previously is more consistent with what AASB has, which is quite vague and does not have the procedures established in it. And it is close to what Kenai School District has in their policy. Fairbanks is quite a bit different. Anchorage is, of course, very different. We modeled ours to be more closely aligned with theirs. There are still some differences. But the old policy is very close to Kenai, which I believe is very close to the AASB general, policy sort of blank policy manual that's available for school districts to modify off of.
Okay. Member Larson.
Well, I'm willing to go with the way the policy has been written, but policy isn't something that pounded into granite forever. And I would like, personally, I'll vote for this, but I would like this to be reviewed over this next winter, because I don't foresee any new vacancies, hopefully, in the near future, to take a look at national trends, take a look at other school boards, and maybe take a look at a revision this spring. But, we're going to beat ourselves to death right now. I like the way it is now. We have seven candidates, and I don't see anybody yelling out a name from the bench, but I'd like it reviewed again if possible. Thank you.
Member Larson, are you saying that you like the changes to board policy 9223 that we looked at last week, and you would like to go with those changes? Or are you saying our previous policy before we rewrote it, which is what we asked them to do? Okay. So the new one that we've asked them to rewrite to follow our...
Let's follow this, and then, we've got some concerns. I think staff know those concerns, and and take a look at them, you know. But for this vacancy and to work with this, what we have now, nothing's perfect. But to review it over this winter and to come back this spring with, you know, some of our concerns at least looked at. You know,
okay.
Because we have a vacancy now, and I think it's pretty well written the way it is. And I like the way it is, except for that area. Thank you.
Okay, so Member Larson has expressed his opinion. Is there any other board member who would like to have a comment before we go to vote? Student member Ms. Williams, do you have a comment on this?
I would have to say that I support the new board policy just because it, yes, it probably will never happen that we don't have any applicants, but in the chance that sometime down the future we do, there are, we can look back and say there are steps and how do we follow these steps. So I just think it's a nice fail-safe to have in place. So, I support them.
All right. Any other comments before we vote? Okay. A yes vote will change our policy. The new draft that we, the proposals that we got last week in our board packet will go into effect with a yes vote. So, Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
No.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Dierman?
Yes.
And I too vote yes, with the idea that we look at them again in the spring. Thank you. All right, so that passes. The item C, can I have someone bring that forward?
I move item C14-036, the school board committees.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there anyone in the public who would like to have a comment? Would you like to come forward and make your comment? I'm sorry, that's on the previous item that we already discussed. So we're moving on to board committees. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on board committees? All right. I do not believe there's an administrative report on this. We have board committees that we convene when we need board committees. There are a few board committees that we have yearly that we put people on. One of those is the Joint Borough Assembly and School District Board Committee. Meets monthly on the first Monday of the month. It does not meet during the summer. Is that right, Ms. Welton?
It can.
Okay.
It's as of last week, we will just see what's on our agenda as to whether we're going to meet or not.
Okay. So we usually assign two members from the school board on that committee. We also have the borough area-wide site selection. We need two members to sit on that committee. Construction trades this year, we're selling the house that the students have built, so we need two members also on the construction trades committee. Matsu Central, we always need a school board member to sit on their policy committee for Matsu Central. And then school board policy is a committee that has been working. Is our work on that school board policy done, or do we have a few more?
Since we're supposed to review the policy every 2 years, we are making it through the first year after 10 years of trying. We finally will probably get through all the policies this year.
And okay, so we do
we
need
start,
to
convene
that. We
will start over again.
Okay, so we do need to have two members also on that school board policy. That leaves us 2, 4, 6, 9 positions on boards. So there is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5 people right now to assign to those boards. So if you guys can look and limit yourself to 2 boards, but look and see which ones you're interested in. I will be asking for volunteers for those boards, but again, 2 of the boards would be plenty for each person to be on. We don't want to have people taking most of their lives with school board. Member Welton.
At the borough committee meeting, they said that the site selection committee would probably not be meeting much in the future because there aren't any proposed schools coming down where they would need to buy property. But yes. One never knows.
Yes. The ones that we have joint with the borough, the names are forwarded to the mayor, and the mayor accepts for that committee. There is talk that the borough area site selection committee will be active this year.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they will...
Staff had said no.
they will discuss Palmer site. So it's going to be a contentious board to be on this year, and I would encourage anybody who is interested to volunteer for that board. So I will start with the Joint Borough Assembly and School District Board Committees. Do I have any volunteers to be on that? Member Welton, you've been on that one for a while, and you still would like to continue. Okay.
It fits into my schedule, and I can get there most of the time.
All right. Member Rutherford, you were on that committee. Do you want to change, or do you want to stay with that committee?
No, I'm fine with staying there, and it is something I can get to easily on Mondays at lunch. I did have a question. If you've been previously approved, they have to approve the members every year?
Every year.
Even if they don't change?
Yes. All right. So we will forward Welton and Rutherford. We had Mr. Larson as the alternate. Do you want to continue as the alternate on that one?
I'd be willing to give that up to any new board members if they can fit in their schedule. The problem with my schedule is that meeting always seems to fall in with when I'm busy with my other board during the day. So,
all right.
But I'll stay on it if there's nobody.
Okay. If you are an alternate on a committee, that means you only need to attend when one of the members is going to be unable. So is there anybody else?
I'd be interested in serving as an alternate on that board.
All right, Mr. Michelson, I'll put your name down for that. All right, so the next one is the Borough Area School Site Selection Committee. Member Rutherford, you were on that, and Member Welton was an alternate. Do you want to give someone else a chance, or would you consider staying?
I'd like to stay. We didn't meet all year. So I'd like to stay for... at least one round of meetings.
All right. Member Rutherford, I'll put your name forward for that. Anybody else have the fortitude to try the school site selection? Remember, I will be forwarding your name to the mayor for approval.
Yeah, I might not get approved. If there's nobody else, you can forward my name, but I prefer not.
Okay, are we going to have any...
You know, I'd be interested in throwing my hat in the ring for that one.
Okay, Mr. Michelson, I'll put your name down. All right. All right, so the next one is construction trades. Mr. Larson was already on that. Do you want to continue on construction trades, Mr. Larson?
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else would like to sit on the construction trades? It's kind of exciting selling and looking at the new house that our students have built.
I will serve on that one, Madam President.
All right. Thank you. We'll put your name down, Ms. Dierman. All right. So the next one that we need to have someone on is Mat-Su Central School, their policy committee.
Yes.
Do you need an alternate for construction trades?
Yes. Would you like to do that?
I'd be alternate. All right. That'd be fine.
All right. So Matsu Central School, I know Ms. Dierman has expressed some interest in that.
I would be interested in that one.
Anybody else can like that, or we only need one member, so Ms. Dierman, we'll put you on that one.
Thank you.
All right, so school board policy. This is Sarah's thing. Ms. Welton, you want to continue to chair that committee?
I would like to, but if there's someone who's really passionate and wants to do it, I would step aside, but there's still an opening there.
All right, so anyone interested in the school board policy committee? I have Member Larson on there also.
I'll stay and assist.
All right.
Is there an open one? Yeah, I'd like to be part
okay.
of that one.
Okay, so we'll have three.
So that I'm an alternate on one and then a member on two.
I think an alternate would be fine. You don't have to.
No, I was interested in the committee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Alternate on the policy committee? I'm sorry.
No, a full-time member on the policy committee, and I think I'm an alternate on the
joint borough. Okay.
Yeah.
I did have that down, but I wasn't following. All right. Other committees will be appointed as we need them or if we see work coming up for those. I'm sorry, Mr. Michelson.
I might have missed it, but why we have some options here that are grayed out.
Yes. We assign members for those committees for when there is something we need to do on those committees. Charter schools usually invite all school board members to their schools for different things. So we haven't been assigning a liaison for each charter school. They regularly invite school board members to come into their schools.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. All right. So are we all okay with committees? Member Welton.
And that is a motion on the floor, so we do have to approve.
We do have to vote on those. Thank you. Okay. So a yes vote means we will go with the names we've taken down and set forward for the committees. Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Dierman.
Yes.
And I too vote yes, so those pass and are now our new committees. Can I have someone bring forward item D?
I bring forward D14-041, bid protest number B14-2, snow and ice removal and sanding.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any member of the public who would like to? Yes, we have three members of the public. Clerk Welton will call forward the names of who have signed up, and then we'll go on for other people who have public comment on that.
John Stefanski is first. Not here. Dan Nelson?
Oh, he's coming up.
He's coming. Okay.
I'm sorry. For public comment, the same rules that were read out earlier apply. Do you want to go over those rules for public comment again, Member Welton? I'm sorry to have you up here while she reads those, but go ahead.
The speaker states his or her name for the record, and the speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to the agenda item. Speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to an individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved, and the issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. And this is not a question and answer time, and you have your 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record. Thank you.
John Peter Stefanski, Skookum Construction. born 1959, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, resident of Alaska 35 years, holder of two world lumberjack records back to back, college degree, contractor up here 35 years. This is like my third time at the school district. For some reason, I always seem to have a problem somewhere in the bids. I'm not sure why, which is brings us to this point. There was a problem. Apparently, somebody wants to waiver the rules, which I protest. The termination was originally determined by the chief officer, which is written into the bid, which the bid provisions, which I asked for a copy to be brought here tonight, but I got no response from purchasing. But the contract does say the provisions and requirements set forth in a reference in the bid document shall govern, not because a lot of the stuff that you guys have in your bid documents aren't what was in the bid, like under bids, that's not what was in the contract. So it's been skewed. You need to get the original contract and read it because they're not the same of the documents that are presented here. That's why I requested that. For some reason, they wouldn't even give me the letter from Stearns. I requested most everything that you have here. I requested for the last 2 weeks, and they denied me for some reason. It's weird because I've been bidding jobs. I've gone to mandatory pre-bids. This goes out nationwide onto the plans room. It was advertised way back in August. Everybody had ample time to bid and show up at the mandatory pre-bid. DNS Road Service is actually a competitor of mine. It's a competitive bid. I've beaten them out many times on many bids. So basically you'd be giving him an unfair advantage, which is federal law against that. But, you guys can discuss that. But you need to read the original bid because a lot of these documents and stuff that you have posted here tonight are not in the original bid document. So I want to make a note of that, but there's been a lot of irregularities. In the contract, it says the chief business officer makes determination. Now, and Rebecca did. I mean, she made the determination. She was right, just like Amber decided not to open the bid because Mr. Stearns didn't go there. Now, Mrs. Stearns had noticed since August, all they had to do is put an addendum out to make it a level playing field for all the bidders. I could ask right now, why don't you give me a waiver so I can go down and bid Willow?
I'm sorry, your 3 minutes is up. We will take the next person on the list for public comment. Thank you.
Dan Nelson.
Ready? My name is Dan Nelson. I'm in Talkeetna, and John's a friend of mine, and he asked me to come up here and talk to the board. Unfortunately, there's good people on all sides, and it's about business. And I plow for the principal at the elementary school, the head secretary, the nurse, two bus drivers, a custodian, and three teachers. And John's asked me to work for him if he gets this bid. So anyway, my point is, I hear everything when it goes to when the school is not plowed. I've been there two or three times. I've actually plowed in the school for people to get to the school on time. And this is for free, and stuff like that. But anyway, and Mr. Stearns, he's done some work for me, and now he did a good job with that. Unfortunately, there's so much going on that if we get this bid, we're going to focus only on these three schools. And I can guarantee you that the elementary school will be, it'll be a better job, flat out. And that's basically all I have to say. John's a good person. I've known him for a long time. He does a great job. He does a lot for the community, and he helps a lot of people. And anyway, he called me yesterday and asked me if I'd come up here and stand up and just say whatever I thought. So anyway, the bid and the politics of this thing, I'm not quite sure. It sounds like John got it. And then now it's under discussion again, so I'm not exactly sure where that is. But anyway, thank you guys for being here, and I'm glad I'm able to speak to you.
Thank you.
Suzanne Barnard.
I'm Suzanne Barnard. I work for you here in the school district and in the classroom every day. And in the classroom where I work, the rules are the rules, and they're applied equally to everyone. There was an opinion stated that that it wasn't really a big deal if Mr. Stearns didn't make it to the mandatory pre-bid meeting. And then there was a determination made that the district was unable to waive the mandatory requirement. In a letter from Mr. Stearns, he wrote that I simply overlooked the mandatory site visit, but I would like to state that if Mr. Stefanski is given the bid, he won't be overlooking anything. I feel confident that he's very detail-oriented and would do a very good job. Thank you.
Is there any other member of the public who would like to have comment on this? Go ahead, come forward and state your name for the record, please.
My name is Bill Stearns. I own B&S Road Services from Talkeetna. Just in a brief moment here, we've been in business in Talkeetna since 1988. We have been plowing the schools in Talkeetna, more specifically Sioux Valley High School, Talkeetna Elementary, and Trapper Creek Elementary since 1994. That's 20 years of service to the school district. We're a problem-free contractor. We have a record of performance. We have met and we work with all the custodians, all the principals, and any special needs that they have asked us to do, we're happy to provide them. Sometimes we provide them without cost. Otherwise, contract is a contract. We've met every obligation continuously, and as I just mentioned, we've been a problem-free contractor. The simple fact is, when I received this bid, approximately last part of August, I failed to note that there was a mandatory pre-bid conference at the school sites. And unfortunately, later on, like about 2 weeks or so, a week after the mandatory conference was required, I took a look at it and my heart sank because I had missed it. And we've never missed, in the 20 years we've been providing services, we've never missed a mandatory pre-bid conference. Nevertheless, I went ahead and submitted our bid, and I think the rest of that part you guys have in your documents there, the timeline and so on, began with the bid being opened on the 3rd. Everybody's bid was open but mine. And the determination was later made, about 3 weeks later, that is, that my bid was, that I was held not responsible. So to this day, my bid remains unopened, is my understanding. I'm simply applied to the purchasing department for a waiver. When I submitted my bid on October 3rd, I submitted it, and just a quick note here, in the bid documents, it says the MSBSD reserves the right to waive any minor formalities or irregularities in the submittal of a proposal or award. And that is simply put what I asked for. The determination was made that I was not a responsive bidder. I appealed that decision. And then yesterday, the redetermination was made that that was a minor flaw considering the fact that we had been providing services for so many years.
I'm sorry, your 3 minutes are done. So is there any other member of the public who would like to also speak on this? All right, seeing no other members of the public who would like to speak, can we have an administrative report, please?
Through the President, I would like to welcome the Assistant Superintendent for Business and Operations forward to the podium, who will provide information in regard to the administrative position on this protocol.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. Members of the board, just want to give you a brief timeline as to what occurred with this competitive bidding process up to today's meeting, and then go through the determination that the school district made on Tuesday, yesterday of this week, after the protest hearing. So on August 27th, the bid 14-02 was issued. It was advertised on August 27th and 30th. On September 11th and 12th, we held a mandatory pre-bid conference, which is really at the center of the issue today. September 17th, all questions were due from bidders. October 3rd, bids were due. October 23rd, a notice of determination went out to bidders for an intent to award, but also to DNS as naming them as a non-responsive bid. So at that point, on October 23rd, they received a notice that they were non-responsive, and as you heard earlier, their bid has not been opened and evaluated at this point. October 28th, there was a bid protest by DNS, Mr. Bill Stearns. On November 4th, Monday, we held a hearing for this bid protest, and then which leads us after the November 4th hearing, I made a determination for district opinion on the issue, and we are before the board per the AR that governs this for the school board to either uphold or deny my opinion. So in your board packet tonight, and this is just going to be a brief synopsis indicating my reasoning, in your board packet tonight you will find a notice of determination from our purchasing department sent to DNS Road Services on October 23rd, deeming their bid non-responsive, as DNS was absent from the mandatory pre-bid conference for Sioux Valley Junior Senior High, Talkeetna Elementary, and Trapper Creek Elementary on September 12th. On October 28th, DNS filed a formal bid protest per Administrative Reg 3311, also included in your packet. The district scheduled a conference on November 4th to allow the bidder to making the protest an opportunity to express his concerns with the intent to award. During this conference, DNS described that they had overlooked the date of the mandatory pre-bid conference, but had ample experience clearing snow at these schools. It was gathered and verified by the district that DNS had been responsible for snow removal at Talkeetna Elementary, Sioux Valley Junior Senior High, and Trapper Creek Elementary for over 10 years. As far as our financial records go back, as far as I could tell, DNS has been providing that service to the extent that potentially over 20 years. After further consideration and in consulting with the district's attorney as to the appropriateness of being able to waive minor informalities and irregularities per item 7.4 of the bid document, I utilized management discretion and overturned the purchasing department's initial determination, deeming DNS Road Services as a responsive and responsible bidder. My reasoning was based on the fact that the pre-bid conference was made mandatory to protect the interests of the district and was not intended to provide a competitive advantage to any particular bidder. Per item 3.1 of the bid document, the district asked the bidders to carefully examine the sites of the proposed work and the bid documents before submitting a bid. The submission of a bid shall, as it states within the document, the submission of a bid shall be an admission that the bidder has made such examination and is satisfied as to the conditions to be encountered in performing the work and as to the requirements and accuracy of the bid documents. Furthermore, under Section 5 of the Scope of Services, the district requires that extreme caution be exercised to avoid damage to curbs, sidewalks, underground utilities, light poles, clean-out pipes, etc. The successful contractor must flag all obstructions, such as clean-outs, fire hydrants, guidelines, utility posts, etc., before beginning any of the work on the contracts. Damages caused by the contractor shall be repaired fully in neat workmanship-like manner at the contractor's expense. In short, the district wanted to know that the bidders were familiar with the locations that they were bidding on and had examined the sites accordingly. All of this was required so that we, MSBSD, could ensure that the bidders knew what they were getting into and were knowledgeable of our performance requirements. being that DNS has provided snow removal services at two Sioux Valley Junior Senior High, Talkeen Elementary, and Trapper Creek Elementary for the last 10 to 20 years, and no significant or material changes were made within the last year to the parking areas at any of these sites, I did not find it necessary that a representative from DNS Road Services be in attendance at the pre-bid conference in order to accurately bid on these services. The school board's decision tonight is to either uphold or deny this opinion. If the board upholds my decision, DNS's bid will be open tomorrow morning and be considered along with the other two responsive bids for snow removal services at these schools. If the board denies the district's opinion, DNS Road Services will be considered an unresponsive bid and not be eligible for award. Are there any questions?
Member Welton.
Okay. My understanding is the language mandatory. Is this commonly used, or it was unusual for this contract?
The language mandatory is used. I don't know how common it is. We could ask our purchasing supervisor to come forward and talk about that if the board wants. The way mandatory is used in this bid document is exactly how you would find in Webster's Dictionary. It was mandatory. It was a required bid conference. This is what the opinion is at this point is that we have an irregularity or a minor informality because we have had someone who is intimately familiar and well acquainted with the sites to where this requirement is being waived.
Member Welton.
I have more. my understanding, I just to clarify, the reason it was used in this bid was to make sure that the contractor who wins the award really knows what they are supposed to do.
Through the president, exactly, Member Welton, the purpose of this was to protect the district's interest and to make sure folks that were bidding on this service knew what they were getting into. It was not intended to provide any one bidder with competitive advantage over another.
You've said what the procedure is at this point. If we overturn the protest, if we make it so that the protest holds, you would then open the bids tomorrow and reevaluate.
Yes, that's correct.
Do you think that you really followed the policies as put forth and the intent of the policies?
Through the president, just a question of clarification. Is this the bid protest policies that you're referring to?
Yes.
Yes, I do. And I've working with legal counsel, know that it's within management's rights to waive this type of informality.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
You said that legal counsel said it was all right to waive a mandatory bid conference for somebody that lives up in Talkeen and has done snow removal, that it's a reason to waive a mandatory bid conference. Is that what our attorney said?
Yeah. Through the president, without putting words in the attorney's, without speaking for the attorney, yes, I consulted with the attorney, and my determination, the district's opinion, is sound in that while this was mandatory, we have an informality or an irregularity that is from my perspective, is something that should be waived, can be waived, and I did utilize management discretion to waive it because this particular contract bidder was intimately familiar with these sites. The whole purpose of the mandatory bid was to make sure that all bidders knew what they were getting into. I feel confident that this bidder knows what they're getting into.
Well, that's fine if you feel confident, but you also stated that the mandatory bid process was to protect the district's interest and to assuring that the individuals that bid knew bid requirements totally. You did state that things haven't changed over the years, but I say that, you know, a mandatory bid conference is a mandatory bid conference, and if you're protecting the district's interest, everybody that bids should
Larson,
be
at... This should be in discussion. We're still at asking questions. So if you
okay,
can
the
save
question
this for
is,
discussion.
Should, well, the question is, shouldn't it be an area to protect the district's interest to have everybody at that mandatory bid conference, you know, regardless if they've snowplowed up there or not?
Through the president, the reason why it's mandatory and the reason why it's in the district's interest is to ensure that every single bidder is familiar and has knowledge of what the performance requirements are of snow removal in these areas. It was not to create an unfair advantage or competitive advantage for any one particular bidder. So the fact that DNS was not there and Skookum was does not create any type of advantage. What it does for us is it ensures that all parties are knowledgeable and familiar with the sites.
Mr. Michelson.
So then, if the tables had been turned then and Mr. Skookum had not attended the mandatory pre-bid conference, then you would not probably have exercised the discretion that you did in the case of Mr. Stearns?
Through the president, that's correct. Okay. Without working knowledge, there's nothing that I would be able to fall back on to tell me that Skookum was familiar with the sites.
Then the second question then is, you know, with all the policies and the regulations and so on, is it stated pretty clearly somewhere that you have discretion in cases like this to exercise that? And I may have overlooked that in there.
Yeah. Through the president, yes, that's in the bid protest process, administrative reg. I'm sorry, it's within the bid document per item 3.1 of the bid document that management has the right to waive minor informalities and irregularities.
Member Michelson, did you find that?
I'm still looking for it, but
okay.
I'll find it.
All right. Does any other member have questions for Mr. Folt? Okay. We may have questions in a few minutes. If we want to move on to discussion on this item, does anybody have any comments on this? Member Rutherford. I'm sorry, Member Larson. You want to go first and finish your comments from earlier.
Well, I'm having a real difficulty. If I'm going to bid on a project and it says a mandatory pre-bid conference and I don't show up, and that's what it states in here, mandatory pre-bid conference, site examination and visit will be held on September 11th and 12th, 2013. A schedule will be listed in the bid packet, or you can call, et cetera, et cetera. But that line just sticks out. It was publicized and advertised, and it was there, a mandatory pre-bid conference. And I realized that the people that are protesting have been plowing there, but what, I mean, the other bidders also are from that area and probably are also familiar with the three schools there, or they wouldn't bid on this. And I'm having a very big difficulty personally saying that a mandatory pre-bid conference, and I've had many of those in my career, not that I bid on them, but I've taken mandatory pre-bid conference people around at different sites looking at different things, and I know that those people were familiar with what they were bidding on. They were very familiar with the actual area that they were bidding on, and I know that if they didn't show up, they were non-responsive. And that's where I'm having this big dilemma of waiving the mandatory pre-bid conference. Thank you.
Member Rutherford?
I have no doubt that it was within the administration's discretion to waive this. I trust that they researched that, or they wouldn't have, but it doesn't feel like the right decision in this case. I think that's exactly what this board is for, is to take a second look at that and decide, you know, maybe if all other bidders had decided, yeah, whatever, go ahead and throw that bid in. Or it just feels a little too much like, I know it's not exactly the same, but a little too much like Ms. Olson's issue. We stood on the letter of the policy when Ms. Olson came before us, and if we're going to stand on the letter in that case, I think we should on this case. And it did say mandatory, and it doesn't feel right to waive it.
Member Welton.
I too was feeling like that, but I'm also, you know, we can be so hard that we don't see the intent and the also the, you know, the to be fair to all. Mandatory does mean mandatory. Is there any kind of leeway here? I feel that the intent is that is the situation. I'm having a hard time with the whole thing too, but I'm really concerned that we do what's in the best interest of the district. And I'm not saying that we should show favoritism, but there's something to be said for the understanding that people do have knowledge. The intent was that people would know what was the scope of the work. And I think the previous bids and how many years they have does show that. I have difficulty with the idea of being so strict to the letter and not looking a little bit more at the intent.
Member Dearman.
Yes, Madam President. I agree with what Member Walton said, and I do think that we can be so strict that we overlook what is in the best interest of our students and the district. Mr. Folk clearly has in his discretion, and he has said that he has consulted with the attorneys, and this is something that can be done. Mr. Stearns has several years of providing excellent service to these three schools in the Upper Valley. And as my grandma used to say, if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it now. And I believe that, yes, there was a mandatory meeting that was not attended, but Mr. Stern has said that he knows he did wrong and there was a way of fixing it, and he has done that. And I just think that what Mr. Fulp has offered here is something that is a plus for those three schools, and it should be considered.
Member Michelson.
Well, I reviewed the advertisement about the where it mentions a mandatory pre-bid conference, and then later on reserving the right to reject bids based on waiving the minor technicalities and so on. And it seems to me that, I mean, I'm all for, you know, following the letter of what is stated and holding everybody 100% accountable for following that. But if we're to exercise discretion and judgment, then so be it, and let's do that, and let's support it. But if we're not willing to exercise discretion, let's not state it in the advertisement that we're going to have the discretion to make decisions based on the facts that are presented. So I guess we kind of set ourselves up for situations like these. I think I think everybody's heart's in the right spot when it comes to providing good services for the school district, and I can see why Mr. Fulp, based on his reasoning, made the decision that he did, fully within his responsibility to do that. But if we talk about, you know, holding people accountable for the letter of what we say, the letter of the law, and so on, then we need to remove the ability to exercise discretion in making some of these judgments. That's about all I would have to add at this point.
Do we have any other comments from the school board? Mr. Fulp, this contract is for 1 year with 5 years, possibility of 5 years?
Yes, Madam President. It's a one-year contract with options to renew for 5 years. And again, the board's decision tonight, if upheld, would just mean that we open DNS's bid and evaluate it with all others. Would not mean that they get the bid.
Could we, regardless of how we vote tonight, could we have the contract be for 1 year and then with us going out again for a contract next year, since there were some irregularities in this, or is that not something that that would be within the law?
Through the president, I don't think it would be appropriate to link the two. Then we're almost striking a compromise with ourselves. I think in order to honor whoever does receive the award, we should just work with them and enter into the contract in good faith.
Okay. All right. So, Ms. Williams, would you like to offer an opinion on this?
I can see both sides of the argument. I don't know. I'm still conflicted. And really, as a student rep, I'm trying to think of what would be the best way to represent students, and I'm almost kind of coming up on a blank on this issue. So I'd have to say that I'm still conflicted.
All right. We did promise to ask your opinion on items coming before us. So, Member Larson, it sounds like you want to make another final comment on this before we vote. Okay. So I'm going to ask Member Larson. A yes vote would mean that we go along with Mr. Fulp's determination and allow the bid to be opened from the contractor who was previously deemed unresponsive. So, Mr. Larson.
No.
Member Rutherford.
No.
Member Dearman.
Yes.
Member Michelson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So, this passes. We're upholding Mr. Fulp's determination and will allow that bid to be opened and considered. So that brings us to the next non-action items. I'd like to take another 5-minute break, and I mean 5 minutes this time, guys. So a 5-minute break, and then we'll move on to non-action items. Thank you. We're waiting on a couple school board members who didn't believe me it was 5 minutes. We don't have a quorum yet. Okay, so we're moving on to non-action items. Non-action item A14035 is Mat-Su Central School new course approvals. We don't take public, or do we take public comment on this? No public comment on these, and we are going to ask for an administrative report on this.
Thank you, Madam President. There were several questions from board members in regard to curriculum and how the protocols and procedures happened before it came to the board. And so we have, there's not one answer for that because it happens in many different ways. And so I requested that our curriculum coordinator, Becky Murphy, just provide a brief overview. This will also serve as the overview for the next item that follows the school presentation. And so we're going to just take the time to present this so that for the two items, you'll have a context for which curriculum comes before you. Thank you.
Let's try that again. Good evening, Madam President, Dr. Paramo, and school board members. Just real briefly, like in 10 minutes or less, I'd like to just piggyback on the curriculum presentation that I presented at the last board meeting, giving you some updates. With our goal in mind that anything that we do with curriculum is really our academic foundation, and in this regard, when we look at the processes and procedures of curriculum development, we're really looking at making our kids college and career ready, and most importantly, we're looking at them from a global perspective and making sure that when we send them off from the Mat-Su Borough School District, that they're prepared to go anywhere in the world and be productive citizens. We have four main producers of curriculum in our district, and I'm a little partial to the first one, I must say, but that's the Office of Instruction. We have the Career and Technical Education Department. We have Mat-Su Central School, and we also have charter schools, and these are all pathways that lead to the school board for your final approval so we can get the curriculum into the classroom with our teachers and students. Real briefly, when we look at the core content areas versus elective course development, I really want to make a distinction here. When we are talking about the curriculum review cycle that was presented to you previously, we look at that six-year cycle and all of the different core areas that we review, we really adhere to the procedures and processes there. We look at the needs assessment, we conduct a writing team with our content experts, we go through the materials adoption process, then it goes to our curriculum council where it's vetted, and then finally comes to you at the school board. It's really important to understand the difference between our core content areas and our elective course development. Our elective course development is really determined by the needs of students and by the needs of our teachers because they are elective courses. It means that someone has a desire somewhere to learn more. We may have teachers that have an exceptional experience in an area with a real passion, or we may have students that just basically rise up, use their voices, and say, we'd like to learn more about this content area. From there, it goes into the course developers, and that is a team of teachers and administrators. From there, it goes through the peer review team, so there are lots of eyes on it. And from there, it comes to the school board, or to the curriculum council, then to the school board. The same process happens for career and technical education. Now, we also have non-traditional schools in our system, and Mat-Su Central has a process, which we heard earlier tonight, that they now have a new person sitting on their academic advisory council, and that's Mrs. Dearman. But really, they start off with a mini curriculum council at Mat-Su Central. It is the Academic Committee of Excellence, and they go through district processes. Their curriculum process really mirrors what we're doing in the Office of Instruction, but it's all reviewed, every bit of their curriculum, by highly qualified teachers. From there, it goes to their AAC board, which has parents, principal, district rep, board rep, and also they do two readings and a vote, much similar to what our school board is doing tonight with non-action items, moving them into action items. They also have a master list of curriculum, much like our program of studies, and then it goes to the school board. Charter schools, because of their academic policy committees and because of the nature in which they operate, their curriculum is really processed through their academic or their APC boards. The document that you have in front of you, which is just to give you a really brief overview, is a handout of the 9-step process that we use for curriculum development through the Office of Instruction that is vetted through the Curriculum Council. It includes multiple teachers and administrators. You can see that there is a flow chart. One of the things that happened in about a year and a half ago, is that we added the 9th step. We had 8 steps, and then we added that everything that we do in our content area for curriculum council is vetted through a content expert on that council. So, for example, the course on Holocaust and Genocide Studies, we actually had our high school social studies person sit with those developers to ensure that that was something that could come forward at the curriculum council. After these are presented and vetted out and we see the scope and sequence of the course, we look at the curriculum, the materials, the curriculum council discusses it, votes on it, and if it passes, and I do say if it passes because not every course passes through the curriculum council, oftentimes the courses are sent back for revision. So in this case, if it passes, it goes and is presented to you at the school board, which is what you're seeing tonight with a series of courses. And that's basically it in a nutshell. But please feel free anytime to ask questions. You can ask questions tonight. But in the future, if you have any further questions, please let me know. I'll be happy to answer them for you.
I did have a question, but it's we'll wait until we get into discussion on this. Does anybody have a comment or questions on this Mat-Su Central School new course approvals? We have a list of five different courses they're asking us to approve. Member Larson.
How you doing? But your mic's not on. Good so far.
Good so far.
I want to read something to you, John. Maybe I should have come to you, but I didn't. I apologize for that. I sent an email out to Dina and Susan, and what I wrote is I would like a presentation. I also see I got some misspelling words in here. I would like a presentation on new course studies of Mat-Su Central School, and I give the number. I have read the explanation memorandum, which includes the committee, the standards, and description of each course. The course description seems to have a lot of fluff and feel-good descriptions, but really no explanation of actual core curriculum. How do they line up with the new state standards? You know, who pays for the course? That's beside the point. And is there guidance from parents and assistants, et cetera? I guess my problem with the six descriptions or the five descriptions is, you know, I don't want to sit here and read them, but that's nothing but an advertisement for a course, and I don't really know anything about it, and yet I'm asked to vote on it, you know? And that's where my predicament comes in. Plus, how does it go through? How does it... You know, my worry is we are one whole unit. You know, you're Mat-Su Central academies, and everybody is one unit, and we want to go one direction, and that's to bring kids up to standards so they can pass a high school equivalent and get technical training and get a job. And these are more of a description of kind of like an ad, you know what I'm saying, a lot of fluff in them. So that's where I'm at. That's my question. And I didn't get an answer from anybody, of course, when I asked questions like that. So there you go.
May I respond?
Yes.
I can see, Board Member Larson through the President, your concern in terms of the descriptors you have in front of me. The part that you don't see is the tools that we use internally through our ACE committee that we involve parents in that because the parents are the primary teachers of this curriculum. But we do have an instrument that parallels what the district's curriculum council uses. In fact, it is adopted from a rubric-oriented tool that we use. We also use content area specialists to vet the various curriculums. The descriptors we had was recommended to do in terms of not overwhelming you with some of these internal tools and instruments that we use. For example, Greenways Academy at the top actually uses APEX, which is a highly vetted and a valuable tool that we use in our iTech program and Advanced Path program. So I'm just wondering for the board, would it be helpful for me to walk through some of the history with this process? I can do that. I don't have slides to support that, but I can kind of do a historical background in terms of why we're at where we are with this process. It is originated in state regulation that came about in 2008 from the Department of Education. And I'd like to think that every year we've done a better job with this. Would that be worth the board's time?
Go ahead, Member Larson.
Yeah. You know, I know what you do over there, and I know through the explanation of the process. But when these 6-5 courses showed up, I can read one to you if you want me to. It just absolutely doesn't tell me anything but an advertisement. Maybe what I'm looking for is more than the I want to be overwhelmed. You overwhelm me with material, okay?
Okay.
I got to vote on these, and I want to make sure that I'm voting on a core curriculum for your school that's going to fall in line with the standards and help kids learn, okay? Not the way this looks. It's just a lot of fluff in a lot of these explanations, and actually I don't understand some of it. I mean, I'll stop.
All right. Maybe Member Rutherford, did you have a comment?
I have a question about the process, and I don't know if this will make you uncomfortable answering what I'm saying, but it's reviewed by highly qualified teachers in this first step, as well as, you said, parents are involved in this process. Do those teachers have the ability to, how much pressure are they under by the parents who are essentially the teachers and who may have brought forth something that this is really what they want? How much pressure are those highly qualified teachers under to go ahead and recommend it to keep going, even if maybe they are unsure that is the best methodology or the way the rest of the district is going? Or, you know, what happens when there's a conflict there?
That's a very good question, through the president. The process is separated so that the teachers that actually are vetting the curriculum, they're not interacting with the parents that want to bring it forward. And I will say this as well, that the board is only seeing, and these are curricular materials, by the way, to separate them from courses. I think there was a little confusion in the way the memo was written. Because you will also in the future see course titles that will come before the board. In the past, beekeeping was one. Norwegian was another one. So you will see those. So these curriculums are brought to content specialists. For high school, they have to be highly qualified in the subject area. At Mattsu Central, we are a large enough school that we do have a staff member for every core area, content area. We do have to go outside the building at times within the school district for art curriculum materials, to name one area that we do not have covered. But everything else we are able to cover within the building. And oftentimes with core materials, we'll have multiple content areas specialists review those curriculums. It's not my impression that, I have not observed any type of pressure, because ultimately the parents want to do what's best for their children anyway. So it leads to rich conversations with my staff to have with parents, because ultimately what they just want their kids to be successful. And if a parent brings forward a curriculum that's thin, that has concerns, well, it opens a great dialogue to bring that parent around to some other vetted, proven curriculums that have a great track record with other homeschool parents. And it also gives us the opportunity then to link that homeschool teacher with this homeschool educator and bring them together. So it actually creates a very positive, powerful relationship and culture within the school. The ACE committee that does the curriculum oversight for our program is something unique in the state of Alaska. In 2012, when the state audited our program, that was one of the highlights that they pointed out, was the fact that our program, Mattsu Central in the district, actually had this internal curriculum council using highly qualified teachers, content area specialists to view all curriculum materials. that doesn't exist in any other program in the state of Alaska.
Through the president, if I might add, last year Mat-Su Central School became the first statewide correspondence that became accredited through, it's Northwest doesn't have the name
it's
anymore.
It's now Advanced Ed.
Advanced Ed. So the accreditation company that is known in the Northwest, called Advanced Ed, that does Wasilla High, Colony High, Career Tech, we put this school under those same procedures, and they did receive accreditation for their processes.
All right, Member Welton.
I know you're saying these aren't the courses, but they are curriculum. Do you have other times when curriculum's been brought out, you can go and see it and hold it and check it out. Do you have any of these that could be brought to the next meeting?
A lot of this, through the president, a lot of the, or several of the curriculum resources in front of you are online sources, which that is the trending in curriculum.
Right.
There's more and more online. In fact, some of these Learning Springs Online, in fact, is a tried and true homeschool resource for many, many years. They now have an online component. So we felt it was important to bring their online version of Learning Springs forward to the board. But absolutely, I mean,
well,
we could certainly...
Something so that I know what it is I'm looking at. That one in particular is interesting to me. I find that that would be a good one that I'd like to see.
If I could also make a comment, if you go to our website and look at the approved curriculum list, there's several hundred items on that list. And I don't know if Board Member Larson remembers, but years ago when the state regs came, we brought forward this list, and that was a very difficult task that we asked the board to do, but it was critical at that time so that we would be in compliance with the state regulations that required the curriculum materials. What I'm hearing from the board is what you're looking for is more information when these things come forward or some other types of instruments that we use perhaps internally that would give you the insight into the rubric we're using or the tool we're using. Is that...
Yeah.
Member Larson.
We as a board, through our charter schools and through the Mat-Su Central and our brick and mortar schools, all want to educate our kids to the best possible ability. And we all want to march in the same direction, and your kids go back and forth from charter schools or brick and mortar and back and forth at times. The description here for these is just, I want to make sure, I know that they are, but I can't see it. I want to make sure that they're data-driven, that they're the best practices, and that they're time-tested from other sources or nationally. But the way it was presented, I guess, in these five different curriculum areas, it's just like, it seemed like a lot of fluff terminology with no meat, you know.
If I could also make a comment that 95% of our families choose from a small list of common core curriculum materials. But there are a handful that they are looking for very unique opportunities for their children. The ultimate measure is whether or not children are proficient on state assessments, from AIMS-WEB to SBAs to the exit exam. If children are performing at or above grade level, they do have great discretion. And I think we want to embrace their willingness to individually educate their children. For children that are below proficient, our RTI system narrows the choice of curriculum down to just a handful of options. And it's a funnel that truly narrows down the further behind a child is or the further over time that they've been behind, whether they've been with us or some other programs. So what we're asking for when we bring things forward are things that parents have brought to us that they'd like to do with their children. And I will say this, the vast majority of these parents who would like to do these bring these educational opportunities to their children through these vendors are advanced or excelling on all assessments. They're doing exceptionally well. And so there is, we do have that competency-based system in place of the Ames Web district assessments, map testing, and other tools as well to verify that these children are doing extremely well.
Just one more follow-up, and I'll let you go. I know you're doing an excellent job over there. What I want to, and any board wants to see is Matthew Central be state leaders and be on the top of the game all the way through, because the more you educate our kids, you know, the more our kids can be successful and keep out of the new facility at the end of Connect down there. And that's what I think that's what we're striving for, and that's what I kind of wanted to look at to see what this was. And your explanation will benefit me at least personally by that. And yes, I would like to see the website. I would just like to see these new courses, because then I will feel confident about voting for them. But just with the brief scenario or the three or four lines, I didn't feel very comfortable when it comes up to first read. When it comes time to a new item, it'd be tough for me to say yes. And that's why I love second read or first read, because we can get this information. Thank you.
Any other comments from school board members? All right. Thank you, Mr. Brown. So item B is 35% design approval for Career and Technical High School Addition. So this is our non-action item, and we will see it again in 2 weeks to look at and approve or vote on to approve.
Good evening. I'm Ray DeBrace. I'm the Director for Career and Technical Ed. Dr. Baramo, President Bowser. I'd like to introduce John Ware. He's the managing partner with McCool Carlson Green. We're here to present 35% for Career and Tech High School Phase 3, and maybe just a little bit of history. Phase 1 was to create capacity in our district for two-period block capstone classes starting way back in 2007 Phase 2 opened, but it has been creating the capacity. In 2007 the school opened. We're 7 years later. We're going to just build on the capacity to expand three new career pathways: transportation, human services, and then a natural resources pathway. I just would like to also publicly share that the design process started on July 27th. It was the middle of summer. We had some significant industry partners that helped design the process through that time. They were busy, and I just would like to recognize them publicly. We had Kathleen Barrows, who is the Providence Healthcare Systems. She's the director for admissions. We also had Dean Crowley helping us with Crowley Forestry Consultants, Scott Hamilton, who's the regional manager for J.D. Steele. We had Dr. Norm Harris, who is the director of the UAF Experimental Farm, Mark Stegar, who is president of Prism Helicopters, and we also had Mr. Earl Lackey, who's the Yukon Equipment Territory Manager. And they really got into the weeds, if you will, on the technical footprint. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Weir.
Thanks, Ray. So I'm going to present a short PowerPoint presentation to just talk a little bit more about the design process. The design process has really been guided by the learning plan, and that learning plan has been established during the 2005 to 2007 when this Phase 2 opened, to really guide how the pathway system would implement the educational model into the facility. We had five work sessions, as Ray alluded to. We involved a number of the stakeholders, school staff, the project management led by MSB, the school district administration, and Ray talked about the partners and, of course, the school district maintenance. Our project schedule is pretty straightforward. We just wrapped up with our schematic design review meetings. We're doing our presentations to the school board tonight. We're slated to have our design finished in February, out for bid in March, and we'll be in full occupancy in 2015. Our budget is essentially $2.5 million. We're going to add 33,000 square feet to the building. And as Ray mentioned, we've got a couple pathways that we're adding in addition to a large media center. We produced a comprehensive educational specification that categorizes the pathways and all of the spaces that are in the pathways, including classrooms, flex spaces, and in order to give the architects the ability to take the program and drive it into connecting learning to facilities, which is what we're trying to do. The image that you see is at the top right-hand side is the existing building. The bottom right-hand side is the existing entrance. And we're providing an addition on to the building to the left. The site plan is essentially the same. We're making some modifications to the bus loop, and we're adding some capacity for the parking. We're providing a little bit of a plaza area in front for south-facing activities. And you can see off to the left is the addition to the existing school. This is just the overall footprint of the school. At the top is the existing school, and the bottom addition is the bottom part of the plan is the addition to the school. So what we're trying to do is connect the partners room, which is in the middle of the building, to the pathways. So the media center really creates that bridge element to create a more academic area where studying and learning can happen simultaneously. And we come through into the pathways. On the right-hand side, you can see there's the natural resources pathway. It's a combination of science labs, a natural pathway lab, a flex lab, and in the center, you can see a sort of a robust testing area that's doing both flex activities in classrooms, testing, and supporting the educational model for each of the pathways, so they're shared spaces. On the left-hand side is the transportation pathway. We have a large transportation lab where we're going to be doing process tech, diesel, and aviation. Thanks, Ray. And we've got some support classrooms that help us help accomplish implementing that educational. So I mentioned the flex areas in the previous slide. This is just an example of how those classrooms can be modified very quickly in order to provide more flexibility built into the model so that we can meet immediate and long-term needs for both instruction, testing, technology, and really trying to make the school adaptable over time. So we often call that agility. So we're trying to create facilities that have agility. So the second floor connects to the existing building through a walkway that looks down into the media center, and we have the natural our human services pathway that it apprises of the classroom, a flex space that connects those two classrooms together, and then the pathway is built around the classrooms and flex spaces. The exterior of the building is really trying to connect the aesthetic and the architecture together so that the building looks comprehensive, like it's a not a campus of buildings that have been added onto. So we've paid attention to the aesthetic and really tried to tie that together, and I think it's coming along fairly nice. On the inside, we're really trying to create that media center that has a lot of natural light, a lot of activity. So it really parallels the partners room where they actually serve lunch, and then they'll have a combination of having the media center with the furniture is all movable, including the stacks, so that you can kind of collapse and move that out of the way and have that for different activities. Our next steps are a design refinement as we approach bidding in March, and we're looking forward to, we have two more milestones for design for the development of the design, and then we'll be going out for bidding. And I'm happy to entertain any questions that you have.
Any board members have questions? Yes, you can ask Ray a question. Member Larson.
I think, by the way, the design is absolutely wonderful. On your pathways, Ray, I know Build It and They Will Come. Do we have people that will
build the classrooms?
Build the classrooms?
Yes, we will. You know, it's interesting. At 85%, the new facility
will handle 285 students, so our total capacity will be 800 students. Keep in mind we have full-time students and we have part-time students, so currently we have about 418 full-time students, 50 students in the morning coming over for district-wide capstone classes, 50 in the afternoon, so we're right at that threshold, and we will carry that model forward. Currently, the aviation program is at Palmer High School. If the curriculum is built, it will roll. Process technology is already built, and I've got to make a plug. We do have a student that actually went on and got an award, if you will, $10,000 scholarship for process tech, so we'll be able to build that out in the new lab. Upstairs will be a pet assistant and also a dental assistant lab around that human services pathway. All of these things are trending in the Department of Labor's Trends magazine. That's where we get our research. It'll definitely fill the capacity quickly.
And it'll relieve some of the crowding in a couple of the other high schools around?
Yes.
How come it wasn't built 2 years ago?
We appreciate the voters helping us put this on the ballot.
All right. Thank you for the presentation. We like the design. All right, that moves us to item C, the course approval, Holocaust and Genocide Studies. So I know we have a few questions from board members on this. Do we have somebody to answer our questions?
Madam President, we don't have a presentation, but our curriculum coordinator and director of the Curriculum Council is here to answer questions.
All right. So, Member Welton.
I just want to make some comments. I told my husband that this course was available. He goes, he wants to go back to high school so he can take it. I appreciate that there must have been a lot of time and energy put into how to develop this for high school students. Was there any particular driving force that said, you know, why are we having this?
Through the president, yes, there was. As a matter of fact, at Career in Tech High School, there were approximately 20 students that approached a social studies teacher there and asked if there was a way that a course like this could be developed so they could do further study. So that was really the catalyst that started it. The teacher that actually was the originator of the course has a strong passion for this particular subject area and has extensive training.
Member Larson.
Well, I had a real concern over this course when it showed up. I think it's a college-type level course, and I've done a lot of research over the years and done a lot of reading on genocide. And I just poked around again, and there was one website that had 125 or 150 pages on genocide in the last century with over, and I've known this for years, and because I'm an avid reader, there's a like 150 million people that were slaughtered last century. Not a year went by that somebody wasn't being killed. My concern is, how do we create a course around that without, I guess, depressing a student that may not have the knowledge or the background of history that this is a common practice and it's still going on today, without, I suppose, having that child walk out of the classroom wondering why they're even here, you know.
Through the president, that actually was a concern that was brought up during the curriculum council meeting, and the commentary was actually that they changed the course from being a 9th through 12th grade course to being a prerequisite that they have world history first, because world history actually does cover the Holocaust and some genocide, which would give students that are going into a more developed, more extensive study, a background or a foundation on which to stand. The other part of that is the curriculum is outlined in the course documents, so we could definitely provide that for you, the curriculum scope and sequence of how the course would be laid out. It is a semester course, so it's not a full year.
It's a history course, but it could be a course in social sciences and other areas too, I assume, or political science, but it's based pretty much on history. And how is that going to be deemed as a history, not a political science type course?
When courses are brought forward, it is the intention of the originator. So this particular social studies teacher wanted it to be a social studies elective. So that's how it was proposed to us, and that's how the council voted on it.
And just to add further, our policy calls for three social studies to graduate. However, in order to receive and to compete for the Alaska Performance Scholarship, students are required to take what we call four square, which means four English, four math, four social studies, and four sciences. And so we have been reviewing and looking at high school courses to be sure that we have enough interest for kids that do want to compete for those scholarships to be able to take an elective course. Many of our students, as we know through the middle college, are ready for college. And so this is an elective for students that are ready and have that interest in that course. I would believe that there's probably other things that we teach that perhaps may affect students emotionally as well. And our teachers are professionals, and I believe and challenge that we will be on top of those items, because it is, these are serious items, but we still read Anne Frank in our mm-hmm. schools as well.
Member Williams.
I know that from my junior rep who sits on the curriculum council, she was excited about this course. She thought it'd be extremely interesting. She personally wants to take it. It was brought up in our SAB meeting through her report, and a lot of the students were interested and they wanted to take it. So I support this. I think it's a great thing to study because we can't just study the good things in history. We also have to study the bad things. So I'm in full support of this.
Member Larson.
Well, I'm glad that there's a prerequisite. What I was worried about is cherry-picking history on one particular item and not talking about the whys, whens, and hows, and the fact that this is a continuous human trait from the dawn of history that we've been slaughtering each other. And I'm glad that you're looking at a prerequisite in an upper level, more mature kids to take this course, because I could see where it could backfire also. And I appreciate the information.
Member Dearman.
I was quite pleased when I saw this in the packet that this is being offered. I think it's while it's not a wonderful subject, it's a wonderful thing to be imparting this knowledge on our students, because we have to remember, if we don't continue to pass on the history, it is bound to repeat itself, and we see that it is happening. It is good, as we have all pointed out, that it is going to have a prerequisite, and the older students will be the ones that are probably benefiting from it. I just think it's a wonderful course to have taught, and it's two thumbs up for me. I can't say enough good about these kinds of things. Just on a personal note, having gone to see the Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C. about a year and a half ago, it's something that needs to go on for people to be educated so that this type of history does not repeat itself, and we have to let our students know, who are not able to grow up with grandparents or great-grandparents that lived through this time, that can impart that knowledge on them. They have to learn it from somewhere, and I just really think this is a great thing.
Member Rutherford.
I'd just like to assure Member Larson that whether or not we had the course, what I thought about when I read this was the fact that at 8 years old, my son was saying, "Why are we at war again? Why don't we like that guy? Why is he doing that to his people?" It's in the news. They're asking the questions anyway. And I love the fact that our teachers are going to help me explain it, because they're probably a lot better at it. I just think it's a sign of the times. Children are more sophisticated. They're exposed to all of this in the news, and I'm glad that we're staying on top of it. I'm really impressed.
All right. Okay. No more comments from school board. Thank you so much. That will come back up next meeting. We move on to future items, future business. We do have AASB starting tomorrow. I believe all school board members are going, and three of our students are joining us there, so we're excited for that. That means the next 4 days for school board members in Anchorage. It's a busy time for us. November 20th is the next regular school board meeting. Does anybody have any particular items they want added? We're trying to keep this meeting shorter because we are going to be selecting a new school board member. But is there any pressing items? Start at 5 for that. We did talk about 5 to 7 and then start our regular meeting at 7. Then the next meeting after that is December 4th, also here at the Matsuburo Central Office. Member Welton.
Is that meeting when we will be having presentation and awards or not?
December 4th, I believe, is the presentation and award meeting.
So it would start at 5?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. And then the regular meeting is usually scheduled for 6, but sometimes we run over on that meeting. We have a lot of really talented students. Is there any other meetings, future business, that board members would like to add or remind us is coming up? Carly.
I just wanted to also remind you guys that our next SAB meeting is November 20th as well, at PGMS, 9 a.m. to noon. So all you guys are welcome to stop in, say hi, meet the kids. They're really friendly. We don't bite.
All right, thank you. Any other meetings? Okay. That takes us down to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I believe everybody who is in the audience was here earlier, so the same rules apply. So persons to be heard, is there anybody who would like to make comment before the school board? Okay, you guys are looking pretty tired. This is the latest we've gone for a while. So see no persons to be heard. We will move on to correspondence and board committee reports. Do we have any committees who have met and need to report? Ms. Welton.
You were at one of the meetings, and Ms. Rutherford was at it, too. So I'll talk about the policy meeting, since it was Mr. Piku, Mr. Tiefert, and myself at that meeting. We went over the 6,000 series board policies and discussed some of the other, the ones that are still being worked on in the 4,000 and 5,000 series that will come up to us probably in January with revisions. And our next meeting is November 19th at 4:30. And that's the day before their board meeting. So.
Will you email me a reminder like the week before that happens? Thank you. All right, Member Rutherford, would you like to report on the joint committee?
We had a school bond update that was very similar to the one we just had tonight, so nothing new there. We discussed the frequency of the meetings, discussed not having them monthly, but it was determined that we wanted to leave them officially monthly with the understanding that there would probably be a few a year that would be canceled, either due to the large body meeting to get both bodies meeting together or just not having the agenda items to discuss, but they're still slated for the first Monday of every month as it stands now. Is that it?
All right. Were there other committees or correspondence people want to report? Okay. Seeing none, then that comes down to comments from school board and administration. Dr. Paramo.
Mr. Pope.
I do want to mention the audit came up tonight, and I did want to mention to the board that that's due to the state by November 15th. Director of Finance, Becky Wright, and myself are working on making sure that's completed. As soon as it is, we'll make sure it's on a future agenda to share with the board and make sure our auditors are here.
Mr. Stone?
Yeah, I just want to recognize Dr. Paramo. Governor Parnell just named Superintendent Paramo at the Education Commission for the state. So.
Thank you. Not sure what the job entails, but it's a great opportunity to represent our district and the state of Alaska. So thank you. I have no comments, Madam President. All right, so that moves on to school board comments. Why don't we start with Ms. Williams?
Besides our next SAB meeting, the only other comment I have to say is that the three members, myself, Ariel Haas, our president, and Kirsten Thomas, our junior rep, we are really excited to be going tomorrow, and we'll be meeting you at 8 or 9-ish o'clock. I haven't looked at the agenda yet, or PAC, so it'll be a long night for me. But we are really excited to go, and we just want to thank you again for this opportunity.
Member Welton.
I enjoyed going to the SAB meeting and playing the game. And for those of you who didn't go to the meeting, you missed the homemade sweet rolls with cream cheese frosting that were just wonderful. They just melted in your mouth. I have enjoyed the opportunity to serve on the committees that I've been on, and I appreciate that I can stay on the ones. I really, really do enjoy them, and I'm looking forward to really good discussions with the borough and the assembly over all of our needs here. Thank you.
Member Michelson?
I'm just looking really forward to the next 4 days. I don't know what to think about the school board boot camp. I don't know how to dress for that, but that'll be fun, I'm sure. And the other thing I appreciate is learning about the school district app today. It was interesting because now I'll have to get an actual telephone that can take an app. So moving ahead, that's it for me.
Member Larson.
Well, there's another school board member further behind than me. I will get the app, but I'll have somebody else put it on. I've got some IT people at home. And I really appreciate the district having students like that come up and develop. Being able to develop stuff like that and work with staff, I think that's a real plus because it just knocks them right into the workforce once they get through college and stuff and gives them the confidence. And I really appreciate that. Just looking forward to getting through. I guess we're in the second quarter already. Wow. I mean, where'd the time go? Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
We had a great presentation at Bear Yozova School since the last meeting. I love when they invite us up there. It's a bit of a drive, but it's so worth it. The students did the saying. They read poems in Russian and in English. Their parents made Russian food for us, and it was a really nice celebration. I really appreciated the invitation.
Member Dierman.
First, I'd like to congratulate Sterling and the IT department. I already downloaded the app, and we'll be getting a lot of use out of that. And it was so nice to see him stand up here and in command of the room and just a great thing, and congratulations to him. I look forward to the committees that I joined this evening. Look forward to more work here for the Mat-Su School District. And since the last meeting on the 28th of October, I had the privilege of teaching an American Sign Language class at Colony High School. And I'd like to thank Principal Duffin and teacher Mary Lee Durham for inviting me and the enthusiastic students there at Colony. And then that afternoon at Twinley Bridge Charter School, Dr. Paramo was there as well. And she cut the ribbon on their new playground, and it was just so wonderful. Despite the horrible weather that day, it would just be so wonderful if we could bottle all the joy and enthusiasm of the children as they saw their new playground. That was a wonderful thing. And then I had the privilege of hearing Dr. Victor DeNoble when he was at Sioux Valley High School, and whoever had the foresight to bring him in, he was just wonderful. And if he could change the mindset of only one student with his information, job well done on that. And then on November 1st, I was here at the State Deaf and Hard of Hearing Conference that was held here at the right here in this very room, and I spoke during public testimony, and that was a very wonderful time for me. And thank you, Ms. Hope, for that opportunity. And then we're off now to Anchorage for 4 days of the AASB conference. And yes, Ray, I have no idea what boot camp is going to be like, but I have my camo packed and my boots are polished and I'm up and ready to go. So thank you very, very much, and we'll see you next time.
All right. That leaves me. I really want to thank the board for their hard work. We've dove right in and had some very rough topics these first few meetings, and I really appreciate the board for their dedication and the time they do put toward school board and school district, and ultimately for the kids. With that, we need to go to executive session. Madam Clerk.
Just before we go into that, do we think we'll go past 10 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to move that we go past 10 o'clock.
I second it.
Moved and seconded. We will go past 10 o'clock. Is there any objection? I'm not gonna take roll there. Is there any objection? All right. Go ahead. There's no objection. We will be going past 10.
I move that we go into executive session the matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. And we are going in for CEA and MSEA negotiations, and in the executive session will be all members of the board, Dr. Paramo, Mr. Fulp, and Mr. Stone, and Mr. and Katie Gardner. Anybody else? No. Okay. Need a second?
Can we keep all the other staff around, too?
Second.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection? We are now going into executive session.